From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about keeping things in order. What we say can sound better or worse depending on where we put our words. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey, Kathy. Hey, Ross. You know, quite a while back, I guess now, we did an episode or a couple of episodes on place names around the world, names of countries, names of cities in other parts of the world that we may be mispronouncing. It turns out, and I learned this from the World Cup, which has been pretty exciting, but I learned that Cape Verde is not Cape Verde. Did you know this, how it's pronounced?
Go on.
It turns out it's Cape Verde.
I know. Okay, you had the same thing, because the first time I heard that, I thought wrongly, ho, 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 boy, did they blow that.
What upsets me about that is at school I had Brown. I went to school at Brown University, which is in Providence, which has a lot of people from there living in Providence. She went to the school. I would talk to her a lot. We would hang out at the library sometimes. I always pronounced it Cape Verde, and she never corrected me. I wish she had.
Find her now, Ross.
I know. I should. I know. You should have told me. I didn't know. I always thought it was Cape Verde. I agree with you.
Yeah,
I
mean, well, we're big Cesaria Evora fans.
Oh,
love
sure.
her. And
yeah.
we always said, oh, the singer from Cape Verde.
Yeah.
Okay. We've all learned something.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, you know, I listen to public radio a lot, of course. And so all of the newscasters and the people doing the reporters doing the stories on the World Cup and so on, we're just rolling along saying Cape Verde the whole time. And so it made me feel like everybody else knows this. I mean, of course, they're saying it correctly because that's their job. But since nobody ever said anything one way or the other about, oh, did you know it's not Cape Verde? I just felt like everybody else knew this, and I felt so silly. Do you have any idea why it's Verde?
No.
I'm just looking it up right now as we talk.
I am too. And I'm finding that those who live there, who I'm not going to try to pronounce, are more likely to call it Cabo Verde. Cabo Verde.
Yeah.
So then we're not being nuts for saying Cape Verde, really.
Right.
If we're trying to anglicize how they're saying it, right?
Well, Kathy, I've got a question here, because here they're saying in Portuguese, the E is dropped.
Mm-hmm.
How do you say it in Spanish?
Verde is verde. Verde.
Sure, sure.
Verde.
Verde.
Sure.
Yeah.
Verde.
So then, well, V is a B more.
Well,
it's
yeah,
more
but,
like a B.
But the E. But in Portuguese, they're saying here the E at the end is almost silent. So there's a big difference between Portuguese, apparently. I don't know. I don't want to get corrected on this, but I'm looking it up right now.
I'm saying it more as duh, the sort of like
verde,
sort of drop it off.
Verde, yeah. Yeah. So apparently it is.
I'm going to say Cape Verde. I'm sorry. I've done it all my life. I'm too old to change.
But they're saying, maybe this is why my friend didn't say it, because she was from there. And they're saying in the local Criollo dialect, it's pronounced Verde. So maybe she heard me doing it, what she would consider like an Anglo speaker doing it kind of incorrectly, but kind of loyal to what she was saying. Or maybe I heard her saying Cape Verde and I just did Verde because that's how I heard it.
I'm just saying the E is barely pronounced is everything I'm saying.
In Portuguese. In Portuguese, but in the Cabo Verde dialect, the Criollo dialect.
I quit. Thank you, Fletcher, for bringing this up.
No, but what I'm saying is in the Cabo Verde dialect, apparently it's pronounced Verde.
Mm.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
Interesting. This is a can of worms I didn't exactly expect to open up. I didn't think it would be this complicated. There's got to be somebody listening right now who knows a little more about this. Maybe specifically about how people in that country might say it themselves rather than how one might just say it in Portuguese from Portugal.
Yeah, I'm looking up two other sources. They both say that the local dialect is Verde. I don't know how it
so
would be.
So I wonder how it got to be that in English you say Verde. How did that happen, I wonder?
Oh no, here we go.
Yeah.
Right again.
I'm certainly not asking you to answer that question here right now, you know, since I just brought this up and kind of sprung it on you. I just think that's really strange because we are very used to Verde. V-E-R-D-E.
Yeah.
That's not a weird thing.
Yeah, no.
But you're saying why were the announcers saying Verde?
Well, yeah. Why in English? I mean, you look it up on...
did it become that?
Yeah, you look it up on Merriam-Webster and it says Verde. Like, I just think it's weird because we are used to Verde in many other places. I don't hear Verde for V-E-R-D-E.
Ever.
But I think probably because of its connection to Portugal. So we probably pronounce it the Portuguese way, which we all agreed apparently drops the E, most of the E sound.
Well, it'd be like more like Verde.
Verde. But then
doing it quietly too.
But then in English, you would basically cut that off because you would hear that like eh sound. You just cut it off. So I'm saying what I think it is, which is so fascinating how language works. We have the people in Cape Verde pronouncing it Verde. But then we have the Portuguese who had taken over the land and basically, or, you know, settled the land, pronouncing it Verde. And then we have English speakers hearing that and then pronouncing it without the E is what I think happened.
Yeah, maybe.
It's a stacked effect, I think. I don't know.
You might be right, but Ross, to be honest with you, until the World Cup, I have never heard anyone say Cape Verde before, ever.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what happened was when they entered the thing, they went into like some sort of technical discussion or they looked online and they found out that the Portuguese pronounce it thus and then we do it that way. That's my guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Wild. I don't even know what more to say about that one. That's just crazy. I was going to say that I was glad that you hadn't brought this up when we did those episodes on place names, but now I see that it would have been impossible. Well, let's move on. Do we have a listener email to talk about?
We do. It was from the original Tim, O.T., who said, in the last part of the latest show, you talked about, okay, now this is where I throw, alumni, correct? Or is it alumni? Alumni.
We've gone through that. English pronunciation
I
and Latin
forget.
Pronunciation.
I say alumni. Yeah.
Is it
okay?
I? Is it the letter I? The letter I?
Yes.
Yeah, alumni.
Yes.
It's what we would normally say.
Which in English, in English it's alumni, in Latin it would be alumni. But
okay,
anyway,
as an English
here.
Speaker,
yeah.
Yes, for whom the place of learning they attended is their alma mater. Mater? Alma mater.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was amazed to learn that both alma and alumnus derive from the word for food, which gave us aliment and alimony, food money.
Hmm.
It's also intriguing that the term nourishing mother should be applied to institutions that until recently didn't admit women. Tim, you write a good letter. I would have thought that philosophers and theologians of the past would brag about the difficulty and strictness of their places of learning, not their nurturing qualities. And then he added, which was the fun, even more fun part, every time I see alma mater, I smile for non-linguistic reasons. Alma Mahler was a lady who got around. After seeing the composer off to that great orchestra in the sky, she spent years with Walter Gropius. She must have been quite interesting.
this makes me realize that when people talk about alms, you know, giving alms, that must be where that comes from too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. I had no idea. I've always just sort of wondered what alms meant and where that came from. Now I know.
The other interesting thing we basically came up with, which we didn't think of until we got the letter, was when you matriculate at a university, that also has a womanly origin, matrix or womb in Latin.
Oh,
isn't
wow.
that cool?
Oh, wow.
Do you want to go on?
Actually, no. I want to stop and correct something here. We may be wrong with alms. I never thought of this, but of course. Alms comes from basically probably the Greek word for pity or mercy, charity.
Oh.
And it comes from eleemon, which is compassionate, which comes from eleos, which is pity or mercy. And no one really knows the etymology.
Oh.
But they're wondering then when they saw alimony in old Latin, in vulgar Latin, in like medieval Latin, they just chucked it in there. So in a way, we could argue there might be a connection that way. But the original word does not come from what we just said it did.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it comes from something that began with an E.
Which is always the danger of doing quickie etymology. Yeah, right. You gotta watch out, guys. All of us do.
I want to just point out, though, that no one would know that we were wrong if we hadn't corrected ours. If you say it with passion.
I don't know. We've got a couple of Latin people who write in, so I'm not sure about that.
Actually, no. We get chided. They know their stuff. I always get upset. I'm sorry, just side note, then we'll move on, that you can't do alm singular, because I always try to do it in Scrabble, and I try every time. I just keep hoping that one day, yes. Alm for the poor, please.
Okay, you may notice we've been expounding quite prolifically, because we're going to go into the topic that we both hate, which is word order. And it begins with this. This prompted us to do it. We were looking the other day, and I found this on Tolkien, correctly pronounced, or Tolkien as we mostly pronounce it. And he was talking, I didn't really like his mom on this. He was talking about...
You didn't like his mom?
Listen to the letter, and I got sort of peeved at the mother in this. So
the letter is to the poet, though, Ross. The letter is not to his
mom. Oh, I know, but he mentions his mom in this, which sort of peeved me, okay? I'm going to read it now.
Okay.
Tolkien, I first tried to write a story when I was about 7. It was about a dragon. I remember nothing about it except a philological fact. My mother said nothing about the dragon, but pointed out that one could not say a green great dragon, but had to say a great green dragon. I wondered why, and still do. The fact that I remember this is possibly significant, as I do not think I ever tried to write a story again for many years and was taken up with language. And he became a philologist, so he began, you know, he began by studying language.
I agree with you, Ross. I think mom was really being a pain. I'm anti-Tolkien mom here.
But it goes back to that whole conversation we were having earlier about word order. And there is basically a word order that we usually unconsciously use.
We talked about this a long time ago. Mm-hmm. We did an entire episode on this, mm-hmm. adjective order, if you recall.
It was basically, there was an order that you put adjectives in when you'd go before a noun. And it's opinion, size, age, shape, color, origin, material, purpose, and then the noun. And if you notice, the shape comes before the color. And basically, Tolkien's mom was telling him that.
Mm-hmm. What does opinion mean?
Like a jerky or bad or evil, okay. That sort of thing.
And then size, because she said you can't say green great dragon. Mm-hmm. And it should have been great size green color dragon noun.
Great could also be opinion, right? It's a really great dragon.
It could.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, hey, what a dragon.
But look, Kathy and I were basically objecting to, even here, we just wanted to bring it up briefly before we go into something even worse, which is adverb order. But just quickly, I think our point really was that she should have emphasized, and a couple of people who have been promoting this idea online should have emphasized, like one person said, they absolutely have to be in this order. Not necessarily. For example, with the green great dragon, you could have like a whole bunch of great dragons, but you're specifying the green great dragon.
Yes, that's
right?
True. That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the mom basically should have, we both think should have encouraged his creativity and said, you know, there are different ways of saying this, but what are you trying to say here? Go on from there. And maybe would have, and I, we both love the Tolkien books. Maybe we would have had like 25 more of them if he had started earlier.
That's true. Yeah. or allowed his creativity to blossom even more than he already did. This is the sort of thing though, that we definitely just kind of know instinctively, maybe not at 7 years old, but I would have no idea what to tell you about adjective order, but you know right away that green great dragon sounds weird.
Yep, you do.
Although, as you said, though, if you're talking about, Ross, you said it, about all the great dragons, mm-hmm. and then green. So, I mean, contextually, it does make a difference. You're taking the one thing out of the conversation. Yes, you go, this is ding, 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 wrong, right. But, I mean, otherwise, it could work. If I mean, there's a whole. I mean, we found so many people actually weighing in on this. Like, they were talking about, what was it? a lovely little old rectangular green French silver whittling knife, right?
Well, that, oh, you know, I remember that say, one. Yeah. That's so many adjectives that you just kind of lose order altogether.
You quit. You just go, I don't care about that knife. Please forget it.
Just point to it, please. Just point to the knife.
Yeah, really. But they were saying, like, in this case, a priceless old knife is not the same thing as an old priceless knife.
Yeah, of course. There's definitely... Yeah.
I'm just trying to delay getting to adverbs.
I know, Kathy. I'm going to throw it on you, too. Now we have... Because Kathy brought this one up. And she said we should do it, and we're going to do it now, and Kathy's going to suffer first on this
one. I'm hoist on my own petard in a second.
Now,
yes.
Now we talked about adverb order a few weeks ago, and admittedly, it was fairly confusing for me.
That's why Kath wanted to do it again. Yeah. Let's go.
Okay. We went today out to lunch.
Yeah, that sounds really weird. I'll tell you what happens. This is really annoying. When I'm reading news copy out loud, adverb order is always really goofy. And I don't know why. It's got to be a print thing because, okay, so I'm talking to public radio here. A lot of people come from print, right? And for some reason, print reporters have really weird rules about things. And it seems like especially adverb order. So like, you know, you want to put when something happened right after the name of something, or I don't even know what the rules are, but they sound really goofy when you say them out loud. This is exactly one of those things. We went today out to lunch. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Right. I mean, that's the sort of thing you would see that I would have to rewrite to something like, today we went out to lunch.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
Or we went out to lunch today.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Let's do one more quickly. We just wanted to hammer this home. And then let's see if we can deduce now, Fletcher, since we've done this before and we're doing it again, let's deduce the rule here as with the rule we had with adjectives. Okay. How does this sound? Every evening, Dad impatiently after work walks home. Every evening, Dad impatiently after work walks home. What's the better way to say this?
Well, you could probably say every evening, Dad impatiently walks home after work, or you could say every evening, Dad walks home after work impatiently.
Okay, what we're going to do here now, though, is we're going to do the rule before the verb, okay? So before walks, we want you to put most of the adverbs in, or most of the specifiers, let's say it that way.
Every evening, Dad impatiently, or every evening after work, Dad impatiently walks home. I don't like that.
You got it.
I don't like that.
But every evening after work, Dad impatiently walks home. That actually, no.
No, I don't.
See, this is the whole problem with this one. And this is where Kathy basically
said, I thought we had to talk about it again. Sorry, Ross. Because I don't think we've explained it at all. And we're still stuck.
Here we go. Because the key thing, the order that supposedly works is this. Manner.
Meaning?
Impatiently.
How you're doing it.
Place, where you're going. Frequency and time.
And purpose.
And purpose, yes. Reason or purpose.
So with if that were the case, we would want to start with impatiently? Dad impatiently?
That seems, yes.
Well, you could do it right after walks. You don't have to say impatiently walks, but you could say walks impatiently, but yeah, whatever.
Dad walks impatiently, home.
Place.
Every evening.
Frequency, every evening.
After work.
And the time.
After work.
Yeah.
But you don't
and
really
you could do reason. You could do purpose then, saying because he wants to go home. You
okay,
know, whatever.
So you're saying that is the order that is supposed to work most correctly, I guess.
Yeah, they call it the royal order of adverbs, which I find very, very annoying.
Let's go through it again. Dad walks impatiently home. Every evening after work, Dad walks. That's what he does. Impatiently is the manner. Home is the place. Every evening is the frequency. And after work is the time. So that's the order that it's supposed to work best in. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. But I was going to say,
but
that sounds real weird when you say it out loud.
Yeah. Because they're going to say, okay, when it's a movement verb, like running or walking.
Uh-huh.
Like Dad's walking home, it often changes to place first. then manner, then time.
Dad walks home impatiently every evening after work.
Which I think sounds more natural.
That sounds much better, yeah.
But, I mean, these rules, they're interesting, and they're obviously, the interesting thing to us on this one is this is much more easily broken than the previous rule. The previous adjective rule basically is fairly, I mean, regardless of our criticisms of it, it's fairly strict in our heads. We kind of know it. And violations of that seem like they egregiously stick out unless we're like specifying, as we said, oh, there are a whole bunch of great dragons. I'm looking at the green one.
Right. Mm.
But in the adverb one, it's much looser, even though this rule does exist.
Yeah, it seems
which
like...
Which is why I don't think it should be called the Royal Order of Adverbs. I'm sorry. Go on, Fletcher. Yeah. I hate that term.
Well, when you've got a bunch of adverbs like that, it seems like you kind of get it right away, or you play with it until it sounds right. I don't think, I mean, otherwise you end up with, like I said, these weird sentences that, sorry, print reporters, I love you and you do great work, but these weird sentences that print reporters write that sound really, really strange when you read them out loud.
Well, there's another part of adverb rules that drives me crazy. And they said, I saw this in virtually every, quote, grammatical guide, and I mentioned it to Ross, that they say adverbs of frequency, like always, never, and often, should come after the verb to be, but before main verbs. So they say, okay, it's wrong to say I go often camping, obviously. You could say I often go camping. Mm-hmm. But then they say, I go camping often, they say is wrong, but that sounds more right to me. I go camping often.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think that sounds better than I often go camping. Well, it's slightly different than I often go camping.
I agree with you.
Yeah, maybe in tone. I think either one sounds okay, frankly. I go camping. I go camping pretty often. Pretty often is what I would say. Instead of just often, that's just me in casual conversation. Yeah. But I would not say I pretty often go camping.
That sounds really weird.
Yeah, you're right. You wouldn't. You're right.
I don't know about you guys, but I've decided I detest adverbs, and I think I'm going to strike them from my vocabulary.
Well, you're like Hemingway. Keep them out of your copy.
Yeah. I'm. You know me. I'm a Hemingway girl, Ross. So yeah,
I know. You are.
This is, you know, for anybody who heard our episode a few weeks ago, I think the way it was outlined just now, I think that does clear things up a little bit. And I'm actually pretty interested to go back and listen to the examples that we brought up last time around just to hear these changes in order, because, you know, there were some good examples. And I think knowing this order a little more clearly now really helps.
I feel vindicated, Ross.
We're going to move on to something really simple. Actually, it's a juxtaposition of simple versus not simple. I was in a car the other day, and the streetcar in Toronto has streetcars stopped, and there was a new sign on the streetcars, or maybe it's been around for a while. I never noticed it. And the old sign, which is still there, says, do not pass when doors are open. The streetcar doors open. But they had a new sign, which I thought was really effective. We stop, you stop.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And Kath and I were talking about this. Basically, like old-fashioned Anglo-Saxon language in some ways is more effective. I immediately saw we stop, you stop, stop the car.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about that because there are a number of things, and we're going to get into a travel episode coming up pretty soon. And in England, I'm not sure, you guys been to England or not? The
sure.
UK?
Yeah.
On the underground in England, they don't, in the subway in New York, they have exit. The London underground has way out, which is interesting because one is Latinate and one is English. Although a lot of times, if you notice, they'll have way out and you go down the corridor and then at the very end of it where the door is, they may say exit.
I have to say, Russ, I'm going to be the opposite of you and don't get upset with me. I think that they're trying. I think the we stop, you stop is incredibly confusing. I think do not pass when the doors are open is much more clear. We stop, you stop makes me stop and go, huh? What? I think that's a case where bureaucracy is trying to make it easy. They're going like, we're going to make it really easy to follow. And to me, maybe it's my brain, I find it incomprehensible. I find it kind of poetic, but I find it incomprehensible.
This is interesting because I had an argument with my wife on exactly that point, and she agrees with you.
She's a very bright woman, that she said, really is.
She said, we stop, you stop means you stop. She said, but when the doors are closed, you can pass. And she said, it doesn't solve the problem that when the doors are closed, you can pass the streetcar.
Yeah.
So she said, do not pass when doors are open is much clearer to her.
I think so too. It's not as sexy. It's not as like snappy, but I understand it. We stop, you stop. I really, truly, I as I said, I stop and I go, what?
This gets me to something on a different, not a linguistic as much as semiotic point. One thing I've noticed a lot of times now with the way international stuff works is that they don't use words at all. They use symbols. Like we have an air conditioner, which we bought, which apparently is Chinese. And instead of having, you know, like cold, colder, AC, fan, they have these funny little symbols. Mm-hmm. And I swear for the life of me, at night, if you're trying to put the AC on, you have no, the symbols look pretty much alike to me. You know, the fan symbol looks a lot like the AC symbol. And like, I mean, I think that if they had Chinese characters, and I asked a friend actually one day to show me the Chinese characters for like AC cold, and they're very clear. You could see easily the Chinese character for, you know, I'd rather have it Chinese.
You had to have somebody show you the symbol, whereas if you see a snowflake, you know what the snowflake means.
But try the snowflake versus the versus the fan at night. It looks the same, I'll tell you.
But if you're a Chinese air conditioner company and you're selling your air conditioner to the United States and also to Spain and also to, I don't know, Thailand, then yeah, you're going to ask everybody to learn your characters?
Or? I guess you're right. I don't know. All I know is that some of these symbols are like impossible.
We were in the Barcelona airport and we were trying to find passport control. They're the worst signage in Barcelona. Just I say that without a doubt. And finally, Randy saw it's a little man with a little book. I thought it was a book. I thought it was like lounge or something.
A little man with a passport. Little book.
Yeah, I had no. How am I supposed to know that's the passport control?
I completely agree. I completely agree with you.
Passport control. Write it in any language. I could figure it out.
No, I completely agree with you. And they have the same thing with even recently on computer. Like they have the trash bin. The trash bin to me looked like something else the other day, and a new one. Just forget it.
Oh, okay. Post no bills, Ross. That's enough.
Yes.
That one, though, I still see post no bills. Do you guys?
Yes.
Well, I don't see it here. I mean,
this is not a place where you'd see that, so no.
No.
No, New York used to have it all over.
Yeah. But I think that's a case where the bureaucratic language we were talking about a fossilized phrase. There's no such thing as a handbill, qua handbill, really, anymore. You know, you don't think of it as a handbill, but we understand what post no bills means.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we do. And I think on that level, we can post no bills anymore until the next episode. Whatever that means, ending segue. Yeah. I love when I was in the Foreign Service years ago, one of the jobs I was given, and I really loved it, was writing sort of incomprehensible letters to angry people. And I would do a really good job of like, what does he exactly mean? But it would calm everyone down.
That's diplomacy.
Yes.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.